The bill sits on the desk, unpaid. The name on the reservation is Anna Delvey. The credit card has already failed. Staff hesitate because she looks like money. She speaks like money. She acts like someone who never worries about limits. In Manhattan, confidence moves faster than cash. Doors open before questions are asked. Hotels extend credit. Banks schedule meetings. Friends cover tabs because reimbursement is always coming tomorrow. The story she tells is simple. German heiress, trust fund overseas, paperwork delayed, just one more day. Behind the scenes, alarms start to ring. Wire transfers never arrive. Documents do not line up. Excuses repeat with new details each time. By the time anyone slows down enough to check, the losses are already real. Thousands become hundreds of thousands. Image beats verification. This is not a story about wealth. It is a story about access. About how far belief can carry a lie before the system notices. At the center stands Anna Sorokin, calm, composed, and already moving to the next door. Chapter 1. The Entrance. She arrived in New York with no visible money and no visible fear. The name she used was Anna Delvey. The name on her passport was different. What mattered was how she carried herself. Calm, certain, untouchable. She dressed like someone who did not wait for approval. Designer coats, clean lines, expensive shoes, nothing flashy, nothing loud. She spoke with a soft European accent that shifted when needed. German when it helped, vague when it did not. She never overexplained. In a city trained to read status in seconds, she passed every test. Hotel lobbies became her staging ground. She walked in as if she belonged there. Front desks responded the way they often do when wealth appears confident. They assumed money would follow. Cards were run. Cards declined. Explanations came easily. The account was overseas. The transfer was pending. The bank was slow. One more night became several. Staff noted the confidence. Managers approved extensions. No one wanted to be the person who embarrassed a wealthy guest over a technical delay. The cost of being wrong felt higher than the cost of waiting. Her story settled into place quickly. She was a German heiress. Her family held significant assets. A trust fund existed, locked in European banking systems that moved carefully. Delays were normal. She spoke of lawyers. She spoke of advisors. She spoke of future plans with authority. Soon, she was not just staying in hotels. She was meeting people. New York rewarded proximity. She appeared at dinners. She joined conversations already in progress. She listened more than she spoke. When she did speak, it was measured. She talked about art, about architecture, about the kind of projects wealthy patrons funded when they wanted their names attached to culture. The idea that followed felt inevitable. She planned to open a private arts club. It would be selective. It would blend gallery space, dining, and elite membership. The name she used gave it weight. The Anna Delvey Foundation. It sounded legitimate. It sounded expensive. People leaned in. She toured properties. She met with developers. She spoke in terms of square footage and buildouts. She referenced funding as a formality. The money existed. It was simply moving slowly. Banks listened. She requested meetings with financial institutions and received them. Her presentation was clean. She carried documents. Statements appeared official. Balances appeared substantial. Loan requests reached into the millions. Questions were asked. Answers came smoothly. When paperwork stalled, she blamed foreign bureaucracy. When approvals slowed, she applied pressure without raising her voice. She projected irritation, not panic. That distinction mattered. Panic signaled weakness. Irritation signaled entitlement. In several cases, institutions advanced discussions further than policy allowed. The perceived upside clouded caution. The idea of being attached to a high-profile arts venture in Manhattan softened skepticism. While the larger loans remained under review, smaller costs mounted quietly. Hotel charges grew. Meals were billed to rooms. Services were extended. Private transportation was arranged. Flights were booked with promises of reimbursement. Friends and associates covered expenses under the assumption they would be paid back. She framed these moments carefully, not as need, but as inconvenience. Her funds were tied up temporarily. She repaid people with gratitude and assurance. No one wanted to appear mistrustful. No one wanted to challenge someone who seemed positioned above ordinary concern. Behind front desks and accounting offices, small warnings appeared. Credit cards failed repeatedly. Wire transfers never posted. Confirmations arrived that could not be verified. Each incident alone felt manageable. Together, they formed a pattern. Still, the delays continued. Hotel staff escalated concerns internally. Managers weighed the risk. Removing her would mean admitting they had misjudged her. It would mean acknowledging that appearances had overridden procedure. That kind of error traveled upward quickly. Many chose to wait. She sensed hesitation and used it. When questioned, she leaned into impatience. She reminded staff who she was. She referenced her contacts. She implied future business. The tone was never desperate. It was offended. Offense worked. At the same time, she cultivated allies, journalists, consultants, creatives, people drawn to proximity and possibility. She paid when she could. When she could not, she promised soon. She spoke of trust, of loyalty, of long-term relationships. Money remained just out of reach. Eventually, one hotel pushed back harder. Payment deadlines were enforced. Extensions stopped coming easily. The tone shifted from accommodation to inquiry. She responded with documentation. Wire transfer confirmations appeared showing large sums inbound. The dates were recent. The amounts impressive. Staff copied them. Accounts waited. The money did not arrive. Accounting flagged the issue again. This time, the hesitation carried risk. Internal discussions turned sharper. Someone suggested the unthinkable, that she might not be who she claimed to be. Even then, disbelief lingered. The story had lasted too long. Too many people had accepted it. Too many doors had opened. That was the danger of confidence paired with access. Once belief spread, it reinforced itself. Each person assumed verification had already occurred elsewhere. But paper does not care about confidence. Banks reviewed documents more closely. Inconsistencies surfaced. Formatting did not match known institutions. Balances could not be confirmed. The trail led nowhere solid. Hotels prepared to act. By the time firm payment demands were issued, the sums were no longer minor. Losses had accumulated quietly. What began as courtesy had become exposure. She continued to move, new meetings, new promises, new explanations. Each bought time, not resolution. Inside one institution, the conclusion settled heavily. This was not eccentric wealth. This was deception. The moment mattered because it marked the shift from indulgence to scrutiny, from assumption to verification. From that point forward, the system began to respond. And standing at the center of it, still composed, still insisting the money was coming, was Anna Sorokin. Chapter 2. Credit runs out. The tone changed quietly, not in public, not at the tables or the meetings. It changed in back offices and accounting departments, where confidence carried less weight than numbers. Hotels stopped waiting. Invoices were reviewed line by line. Dates were checked. Card attempts logged. Each failure added pressure. Managers who had approved extensions began documenting decisions. Emails shifted from polite reminders to formal demands. Anna Delvey responded the same way she always had. Calm, slightly annoyed. She said the wire had already been sent. She said the delay was on the bank's side. She forwarded confirmations that appeared official at a glance. Large sums, clean layouts, European formatting. Staff forwarded them internally. Accounting waited again. The money did not arrive. At the same time, banks moved from curiosity to caution. Loan officers who had once entertained presentations now questioned documents. Statements did not match known institutions. Contact information led nowhere verifiable. Requests for direct confirmations stalled. One bank halted discussions completely. Another escalated the file to fraud review. The pattern became impossible to ignore. The same explanation repeated across institutions. Overseas delay. Administrative issue. Tomorrow. Tomorrow never came. Friends who had covered expenses began asking for repayment. Some were patient. Some were not. She reassured them all. She promised repayment. She framed delays as temporary and irritating. She acted insulted by doubt. That tactic still worked on some, not all. One associate pushed harder. They needed the money. She promised a wire. She showed proof. The associate waited. The account remained empty. The illusion cracked. Behind the scenes, hotels shared concerns. Names appeared on internal watch lists. Notes warned staff not to extend further credit. One property prepared to remove her if payment was not secured. She moved before that happened. She checked out and checked in elsewhere. The pattern repeated, initial courtesy, early warning signs, extensions granted, pressure delayed. But the city was shrinking around her. The circles talked. Accounting departments flagged her name. Some doors stayed closed now. She pivoted. If institutions slowed, individuals could still be leveraged. She leaned harder on personal relationships. She spoke of urgency, of deals on the verge of closing, of reimbursements imminent. She booked travel without funds, flights, cars, hotels. She promised repayment once transfers cleared. The amounts grew larger, the timelines shorter. When challenged, she produced documents again, screenshots, emails, transfer notices. They looked real enough to buy time, not enough to buy trust. Eventually, one hotel took formal action. A complaint was filed, not dramatic, procedural. Theft of services, unpaid balances, documented failures to pay. The language was dry. The implication was not. Law enforcement became involved. Detectives reviewed the file. They looked at dates. They looked at amounts. They looked at patterns. Multiple institutions, multiple failed payments, similar explanations. They requested records. Banks cooperated. Hotels provided logs. Associates submitted messages and confirmations. Each piece alone was small. Together, they formed a clear picture. The documents she used did not hold up under scrutiny. Wire confirmations did not correspond to real transfers. Account balances could not be verified. Some documents were fabricated outright. The deception was no longer theoretical. An arrest warrant was prepared. She did not flee. She did not hide. She continued to operate as if momentum would carry her through. She scheduled meetings. She talked about the foundation. She spoke of lawyers working on the delays. When officers approached her, she appeared surprised, but not panicked. She maintained composure. She insisted everything was a misunderstanding. She said the money existed. She said the transfers were real. She was taken into custody. The charges were specific: theft of services, grand larceny, attempted larceny related to bank loans, each count tied to documented losses and verified false statements. Bail was addressed. Conditions were set. She was released. Even then, the pattern did not stop. While under scrutiny, she continued to project confidence. She spoke to people about future plans. She framed the case as a temporary setback. She said it would be resolved once the banks confirmed the transfers. Media attention began to build, not yet at scale, but enough to draw interest. A young woman posing as a wealthy heiress, high-end hotels, big numbers, New York. The story had shape now. Prosecutors prepared the case. They separated allegation from proof. Each charge required evidence. Each document was verified. Each transaction traced. The narrative that had protected her began to collapse under documentation. Institutions reviewed their failures, why credit had been extended, why procedures had been bypassed, why verification had been delayed. No one wanted to answer those questions publicly. She waited. Court dates approached, evidence mounted, witnesses were identified, hotel managers, bank employees, associates who had covered expenses. The confidence that once opened doors now carried no weight in court filings. This was no longer about image, it was about records. And at the center of it, no longer moving freely between lobbies and meetings, was Anna Sorokin, facing a system that finally stopped listening to promises and started reading paper. Chapter 3, The Cost of the Lie. The courtroom stripped away what confidence had protected. There were no lobbies here, no deferential staff. No soft delays justified by appearance. The process moved on paper and procedure. Dates, counts, evidence, everything slowed down and closed in. Prosecutors laid out the case methodically. They did not argue personality, they argued records. They presented unpaid hotel bills tied to specific dates and properties. They showed logs of declined cards and repeated extensions granted without payment. They introduced emails where wire transfers were promised and confirmations provided. They followed each confirmation to its endpoint. No money arrived. They moved to the banks. Loan applications were shown side by side with the documents that supported them. Statements claiming millions in foreign accounts. Letters attributed to banks that could not verify authorship. Contact information that led nowhere. Experts testified to standard banking procedures. What legitimate confirmations looked like, how transfers were tracked, how balances were verified. The documents failed every test. Witnesses described how belief filled the gaps where verification should have been. Hotel managers explained why they extended credit, the expectation of wealth, the fear of offending a high-value client, the assumption that someone else had already checked. Friends and associates testified carefully. Some described paying expenses with the expectation of reimbursement, Some spoke about repeated delays. Others described how doubt crept in only after losses accumulated. Each account followed the same pattern: confidence first, verification last. The defense did not dispute that bills went unpaid. They did not dispute that money never arrived. They focused on intent, on confusion, on claims that funds existed but were inaccessible. The jury was instructed to separate explanation from evidence. They deliberated on what could be proven. The verdict reflected the paper trail. She was convicted on multiple counts, including grand larceny and theft of services. Some charges were dismissed, others held. The outcome tracked exactly what documentation supported, no more and no less. Sentencing followed. The judge spoke about trust, about systems that rely on good faith, about harm that does not require violence to be real. Financial damage, reputational damage, the strain placed on individuals and institutions. The sentence included prison time. As she was led away, the image that had carried her through New York no longer mattered. Clothing was regulated, movement was restricted, status dissolved into routine. Incarceration imposed a different kind of pressure. Time became fixed, control narrowed. The tools she used to manipulate perception were gone. The case did not end quietly. Appeals were filed, some convictions were challenged. Outcomes shifted at the margins, but not at the core. The record remained, the fraud stood. Outside the courtroom, the story grew. Media coverage expanded. Articles examined how access worked, how social signals replaced safeguards, how institutions designed to manage risk had been persuaded to suspend it. The question moved beyond one person. Hotels reviewed policy. Banks tightened review. Internal memos circulated. Training emphasized verification over assumption. Quiet changes were made. The losses were absorbed. Some were recovered. Many were not. Individuals carried their own aftermath. Embarrassment. Financial strain. Distrust, relationships altered by money that never came back. After serving part of her sentence, immigration consequences followed. Her status became an issue. Detention continued the process in a different system with the same outcome. Limited agency, long waits, decisions made elsewhere. Public interest surged again as adaptations and commentary emerged. The narrative shifted tone depending on who told it. Some framed it as audacity, others as failure of oversight. Courts did not participate in that framing. They recorded facts. What remained unresolved was not whether the deception occurred. That was established. What lingered was how easily it worked. The case exposed a weakness that could not be sentenced. The tendency to equate confidence with credibility. The willingness to delay verification when appearance suggested reward. No single rule had been broken in isolation. Many small decisions aligned, courtesy extended, assumptions layered, doubt postponed. By the time scrutiny arrived, the damage was already done. The story of Anna Sorokin ended in court, but the conditions that allowed it did not disappear with the verdict. Access still moves faster than proof. Belief still opens doors, and systems built on trust remain vulnerable when trust is mistaken for evidence. That was the cost that remained after the sentence was served.